Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition, Saturday, August 21st, 2021. Section A. Midland Memorial Hospital caring for 108 COVID patients. The most at Midland Memorial on a day during the pandemic is 116. By Stuart Doreen. Midland Memorial Hospital was slammed with 9 more COVID patients to bring the total number being cared for Friday morning to 108, according to Midland Health. The numbers included 95 active patients and another 13 convalescent patients. Midland Health also reported 20 of the 108, nearly one-fifth, are on ventilators. Here are other things to know about the COVID crisis on Friday in Midland. The most COVID-19 patients at Midland Memorial on a day during the pandemic is 116. Midland Health reports that 12 of the 108 current COVID patients are vaccinated. The most cases of any group are 22, those 30 to 39 years of age. There are 19 each of 40 to 49 and 60 to 69. There were 228 total patients inside Midland Memorial Hospital. The number of COVID inpatients is 47% of the total. Midland health officials report there are a total of 253 inpatient rooms available. There had been 778 people tested inside Midland Health testing centers as of Friday morning. There were 236 positive tests. Medical Center Hospital in Odessa reports there are 95 patients there, including 35 in the critical care unit and 30 on ventilators. MCH officials also reported 18 were vaccinated, including 7 in the CCU. The patients' age ranges are from 4 weeks to 96 years. As far as COVID cases inside Midland County, the Midland Health Department is behind in its posting of cases. On Friday, the Health Department posted cases from August 10th. There were 185. That brings the total to 406 from August 8th through the 10th. At that pace, the number of cases will easily top the week before, when there were 663 cases. The most cases this calendar year is 1,013 from January 3rd through the 9th. Oil price losing streak at 2-year high. Oil prices posted their longest losing streak in 2 years, dropping in 7 consecutive trading days. Prices have been undercut by growing concerns about the impact of the surging Delta variant of the COVID virus on global economies and energy demand, and most recently by a strengthening dollar and signals the Federal Reserve will start tampering stimulus. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile sank 8.9% for the week, to close down 67.29 at Monday's close. The posted price ended the week at $58.8 a barrel. A natural gas price has mixed week on the New York Mercantile, rising 3 of 5 trading days. Natural gas prices closed Friday at 3.956 at Monday's close. Oil producers continue to take oil price volatility in stride. Devon Energy officials told the Reporter Telegram by email that the company remains disciplined and will not increase production until demand signs recover. We've seen a volatile commodity market and do not intend to respond to that volatility. On the company's latest earnings call, Devon President and Chief Executive Officer Rick Muncrief said, "We have no intention of adding incremental barrels into the market until demand-side fundamentals sustainably recover, and it becomes evident that OPEC Plus spares oil capacity is effectively absorbed by the world markets. We are unwavering in our commitment to lead the industry with disciplined capital allocation and higher dividends." In a recent interview with David Ignatius, Chevron Chief Executive Officer Mike Wirth commented that the market is really not in a state of equilibrium. demand is returning, but unevenly and with a lot of uncertainty as the effects of the pandemic still are evident in many of the markets around the world. We've seen strong recovery and demand for gasoline and diesel fuel in most places, aviation fuel less so, particularly with international air travel being at a very low level. And then on the supply side, there's been a lot of investment withdrawn from projects that would deliver new supply. And the countries in OPEC and OPEC Plus have pulled production back as well. And so there's supply that can come back into the market readily and has been coming back steadily here over the past number of months. And then on the demand side, we've seen a recovery, but also uncertainty. And so it's a market really that is not in equilibrium. And I think it's a difficult one to make projections about because you have to make assumptions about both supply and demand that are very difficult in an uncertain environment like this. Commodity prices have risen substantially in the first half of the year, leading to higher returns throughout the major oil-producing basins. The analytics firm said returns in the Permian, Eagle Ford, and Bakken are now having half-cycle internal rates of return at or above 35%. Those higher returns are bringing about more drilling and completion activity, resulting in higher demand for services. That, coupled with inflationary increases for material, is boosting total well costs. While the 3% gain is not a large increase, S&P Global Platts analysts will be watching it closely for the remainder of the year. Commodity prices are anticipated to remain strong, and operators are expected to continue to keep increasing their rig counts, which will inevitably cause service companies to keep raising D&C costs to keep up with demand. While break-even prices are likely to increase moving into the latter half of the year, a slowly rising break-even price should have little effect on the robust returns operators are generating within the major shale basins. ConocoPhillips combo exceeds expectations, by Milla McEwen. Last fall, the oil world woke to the surprising news that Midland's own Concho Resources was being acquired by ConocoPhillips. That merger took place 6 months ago, and all involved say the integration of the two companies is progressing successfully. I spent my entire career building lower 48 companies around four philosophies that I think matter most: great assets, high-performing teams, smart capital allocation, and strong balance sheets. ConocoPhillips has the best of all four of these, and I believe it's only going to get better, Tim Leach, former chairman of the chief executive officer, said, who now serves as executive vice president of ConocoPhillips. The reason I bring this up is to say that my optimism since joining ConocoPhillips continues to increase. After only 6 months, I believe we've quickly established our lower 48 business as an industry leader. Jack Harper, former Concho president and now ConocoPhillips Permian president, told the Reporter-Telegram that looking to the future was the main motive for the two companies to merge. This was a unique deal in that you had two strong companies that were both playing offense. Neither company was trying to fix something, but rather trying to create something that hadn't been created before. That's a massive E&P company with scale and relevance that can face the challenges of our industry over the next several decades. Harper continued, when you have good acreage and good execution, you should expect good well results. And we're fortunate to have leading well results in both the Delaware and the Midland Basins. Leach agreed, my excitement about the performance of the lower 48 couldn't be higher. When you take the different levels of technology that we're applying to a broader set of really, really good assets, my expectation is that the efficiencies we're getting out of our business and the performance of our business would just continue. According to ConocoPhillips, update offered the end of June, expected synergies and cost savings are already exceeding expectations. The company said those synergies and cost savings are about $1 billion annually, double expectations since the deal was announced. Under its updated 10-year plan, the company would produce 3.9 billion equivalent barrels with an average cost of supply of less than $30 per barrel. and would drill approximately 6,800 wells with a fully burdened average cost in the low 30s for West Texas Intermediate. While ConocoPhillips has a major presence in the core of all the major oil-rich basins in the lower 48, with an acreage position of more than 1.5 million net acres, the Permian is expected to generate $23 billion of the company's $70 billion in 10-year free cash flow. The company offered an example of how the two companies adjusted to their new combination through the implementation of a slim hole drilling design. Through this implementation, rates of penetration have improved by 30% and drilling costs have been cut by $500,000. Right after the deal closed, permits on the acreage Conoco brought to the deal were modified to include slim hole design. On the very first well, spud-to-spud days were reduced 50% with a savings of more than $1 million over the authorization for expenditure. The company is also beginning to fully leverage its Eagle Ford experience to expand its refrac program into the Permian, with plans to test refracs in the Midland and Delaware basins later this year. For the second quarter, ConocoPhillips reported production in the lower 48 holdings averaged 794,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day, including 435,000 bored from the Permian, 227,000 bored from the Eagle Ford, and 95,000 bored from the Bakken. ConocoPhillips has invested about $1.5 billion so far in the lower 48 in the first half of the year and expects that investment rate to hold steady through the rest of the year. Currently, the company is running 15 rigs, 11 in the Permian and 4 in the Eagle Ford, and is running 7 frac spreads, 4 in the Permian and 3 in the Eagle Ford. That activity level is expected to remain fairly consistent throughout the rest of the year. Midland unemployment falls to 6% in July. By Mella McEwen. Midland's labor market put the summer doldrums behind it in July, posting sharp improvements with its July figures. The Texas Workforce Commission reported Friday the unemployment rate in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, which includes Martin and Midland counties, fell to 6% in July. Midland's western neighbor, Odessa, saw an even stronger improvement, seeing unemployment fall a full percentage point to 8.7%. "We're definitely trending in the right direction," commented Willie Taylor, chief executive officer, speaking with the Reporter Telegram by telephone. He said he is pleased with the gradual recovery in the labor market. "It's been a slow process, but we're gaining back our confidence. Drilling activity is up, and we have people requesting training, whether it's CDL or health care, education, linemen, automotive, or diesel technology." Members of his advisory board, which he said met face-to-face recently for the first time since the pandemic began, tell him this is a job seeker's market for those with skills, and they're finding it difficult to find skilled workers. "We see it too," he said, predicting that wages will start to rise as employers trying to attract workers start raising pay. The dominant mining, logging, and construction sector continues to carry the load on wages with $924 million, followed by the trade, transportation, and utility sector. Still, he said, offices in the 17 counties he oversees are seeing people return to the workforce. Indeed, the civilian labor rose by almost 1,000 from June to July. The number of employed Midlanders also rose by almost 1,500. Over the past 12 months, Midland's labor force has risen by 1,600. As I get around and talk to people, I ask them what are the issues they have in hiring, and they tell me the cost of living is very high in Midland and Odessa. That's probably true. Another concern is access to child care for those wanting to return to work, and Taylor reiterated that his office has funds for those needing help paying for child care. Midland added 400 jobs from June to July for a non-farm job count of $97,300. For the 12 months from July 2020 to July 2021, Midland has added 7,000 jobs for a job growth rate of 7.8%. Midland teen arrested, charged with assaulting pregnant woman. Grayson Luke West, 19, was arrested Thursday and charged with assault of a pregnant person, a third-degree felony. According to their arrest affidavit, he was and the victim were in a verbal disagreement when the woman attempted to leave in her car. After the woman entered her vehicle, West allegedly slammed the car door on her foot while it was between the door and the door frame. The woman reported she was 9 weeks pregnant, sustained an injury to her foot following the alleged assault. West was released from the Midland County Jail on Thursday. An Odessa man was arrested by the Midland Police Department on Thursday and charged with harassing and stalking a Midland woman. Blake Andrew Parks, 36, allegedly stalked the woman on several occasions from August 5th through August 9th, according to the affidavit. He allegedly repeatedly called, emailed, sent the woman videos, and showed up at her home. The woman told police she's afraid to leave her apartment because she believes Parks will be outside waiting for her. Parks was released from the Midland County Jail Thursday on $25,000 bond. Drilling activity continues to trend higher. By Mella McEwen. Drilling activity continued to inch higher and amid faltering oil prices and a lack of appetite by operators to drill. A week after adding the most rigs in 4 months, the U.S. rig count rose by 3 to 503. The rig count is 249 rigs higher than reported at this time last year. There were 405 rigs seeking crude and 224 more than 183 drilling for oil last August. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas fell by 5 to 97. Texas saw its rig count inch downward, dropping one rig to 231. Midland and Martin County each reported 27 rigs, down one for Martin and unchanged for Midland. The Permian Basin rig count rose by 2 to 247, 120 more than in the region last year. Ernest Clayton Johnson, Jr. passed away peacefully at his home in Midland on August 17th. Visitation will be held Monday, August 23rd from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Service will be held at 2 p.m. Tuesday, August 24th at the Branch. A reception open to the public will be held August 24th at 7 p.m. at the Legend High School Fieldhouse. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Gerald Dennis Laney of Midland passed away on August 14th. Visitation will be Thursday, August 26th from 5 to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will be Friday, August 27th at 1 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial will take place at American Heritage Cemetery. Labrada and Frederico Robledo both entered the gates of heaven on August 17th. A public viewing will be held at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home on Monday, August 23rd from 10 to 9 p.m. with the rosary starting at 7. Funeral services will be held on Tuesday, August 24th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church at 10 a.m. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Nancy Sue Donovan passed away on August 9th. Services will be held at Trinity Memorial Gardens Open Air Peace Chapel in Big Spring on Wednesday, August 25th at 10 a.m. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to the Odessa College Nancy Donovan Memorial Scholarship Fund. Terry Frame passed away last week. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Sunday, August 22nd at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. at the Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Coy Lee Cook passed away Tuesday, August 17th. A special memorial service will be held at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Domingo Carrizales of Midland passed away on August 19th. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Wednesday, August 25th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, August 26th at St. Stephen's. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Piglin Welsh Funeral Home. Raul Quintanilla Jr. of Midland passed away on Wednesday, August 18th. Services will be held at a later date. Mamie Lucille Basbed passed away August 17th. A wake will take place on Thursday, August 26th from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Friday, August 27th at 1 p.m. at Alexander Temple Church of Christ in God and in Midland. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, August 21st. Events to feature COVID safety measures by Federico Martinez. Despite increasing concerns about COVID-19, the Permian Basin Fair and Expo and Permian Basin International Oil Show are still scheduled to proceed in September and October, event organizers said on Friday. Event organizers will strongly encourage attendees to exercise precaution, including wearing face coverings and practicing social distancing. The board has been working hard to make sure we have a safe event, Permian Basin Fair and Expo spokeswoman Barbara Magana Robertson said. The board is concerned about the new wave of COVID, but it also believes people need to have some fun. During a Thursday COVID Zoom call, local health experts warned against Odessans participating in large crowd events. The Permian Basin Fair and Expo is scheduled for September 3rd through the 12th at the Ector County Coliseum Fairgrounds. In addition to encouraging people to wear face coverings, exhibits will be spaced further apart to encourage social distancing, and plenty of hand sanitizer will be available at the event. This year's event will also feature a free COVID vaccination booth to encourage attendees to get vaccinated. The Permian Basin Fair and Expo, which was canceled last year due to COVID concerns, will be celebrating its 45th anniversary. The popular event has awarded more than $1 million in academic scholarships during its existence. The Permian Basin International Oil Show is scheduled for October 19th through the 21st at the Ector County Coliseum. This year's show will feature more than 750 oil and gas-related companies exhibiting in 1,200 spaces and attracts participants from throughout the world. COVID safety protocols for the event are still being finalized, according to organizers. Fifth Grader Raises Money for St. Jude's by Michael Bauer. When Chloe Rubalcaba heard that her father's aunt had cancer, she soon came up with an idea to help those who have been affected by the disease. The 10-year-old fifth grader started selling bracelets and keychains as a way to raise money and send the benefits to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. My husband's aunt got diagnosed with cancer, and so they started holding fundraisers for her treatment, Chloe's mother, Betty Rubalcaba, said, and so everybody helped. We did several fundraisers. With Chloe, this is one of her favorite people. This lady is one of her favorite people, and I had to sit and explain to her what cancer was. A few days later, she said she wanted to raise money for people with cancer. With no shortage of creativity, Chloe got to work making little rubber band bracelets and keychains. She started assembling them this summer with the help of her parents, her sister Cassandra, 9, and her two cousins, Amador Viles, 7, and Bella Urias, 5, going by the name Chloe's Crew. She's always been very artistic, Betty said. She started making little rubber band bracelets. She and her sister and her cousins began selling them. A few weeks into that, they started selling them. The keychains are made with melty beads. You just make a design on a paint board, and then you iron it and it fuses together, Betty said. Her first goal was to raise $50, but Chloe and her crew easily surpassed that mark, raising $67. For her, it's all part of the plan of helping to raise as much as she can to help those who are not healthy. My favorite part is that when I sell them and get the money, I'm thinking about all those kids out there that are getting this money will be having good lives, Chloe said. I might have a good life, but other kids may not. I just want them to feel the same way I do. I feel happy when I make $1, even if it's one penny. I'm excited to help out in any way because it's going to help a kid out there who needs it. Chloe, who currently attends school at Austin Montessori Elementary, has taken a short break this past week from making keychains and bracelets due to the start of the school year, but she intends to get back to work as she now has set a goal of raising $100. Now with the school year starting up, we're trying to get into the schedule again, Betty said. We've kind of stopped a little bit just to get her back on routine, but for Halloween, she wants to raise $100 for St. Jude. Chloe has made some different designs with the keychains and necklaces, including Baby Yoda from the show The Mandalorian. Other designs include cactus and a Nintendo Switch and the game Among Us. Betty's cousin owns her own gym. A couple of times during the week in the summer, Betty would bring Chloe and her crew along where they would make the keychains and bracelets before selling them to other gym members. We would go out there and I would always do the afternoon gym classes, Betty said. Chloe would have her little setup and have a sign that said bracelets for $1, and she would sit there. The women would come in and buy them. Mostly it was my cousin's gym people who would come in and buy the bracelets and keychains. We're back at school, and she's hoping to sell some to the teachers. The bracelets and keychains didn't take long to make, Chloe said, adding that she would also make them at home at night. I had my mom helping me, Chloe said. My dad helped out, too. He also paid for the equipment. We would make like 2 or 3 each at night, but we would make small ones and big ones. I would say we would make 5 or 2 of the big ones. We would make as much as we could. We would stay up until 12 making them during the summer. While Chloe aims to continue making the bracelets and keychains, her mother is proud of the work she's done along with her crew. It wasn't prompted by me, Betty said. This is something that she came up with and did on her own. We've supported her. We bought her all the materials that she needs so she could do this, but it doesn't surprise me. Both she and her sister have been going to Austin Montessori, and so a lot of the curriculum revolves around giving back to the community and grace and courtesy. These girls, ever since they were 3, they've heard and seen acts of kindnesses all around them, and it's just something that's second nature to them. They've been at this school since they were 3. They're now in 4th and 5th grade. All the teachers they've had have shown them how to be caring human beings, how to be courteous and give back to the community. My family is very giving and very loving. To know that they're doing this, it's heartwarming. It's amazing to see. Quick hits. Fall English classes. Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center is currently enrolling for fall English classes. Classes are available online and in person with various days and times available beginning August 30th at PBALC, 1709 West Wall Street in Midland. In-person classes are also available from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. Tuesdays starting August 31st at Odessa Bible Church, 3901 Penbrook Street, and at First Church of the Nazarene, 1400 South Lancaster Street, Big Spring. Student applications can be completed online at https://bit.ly/PBALC-student. The last day for students to enroll is September 9th. Classes are open to adults 18 years of age and older. Students are required to pay a once yearly enrollment fee of $25. To enroll or for more information, call 432-682-9693, extension 404. Email adejong@pbalc.org or visit pbalc.org. double feature. Odessa Arts will present Las Nuevas Tamaleras and the Good Balloon double feature at 6 p.m. October 9th at the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue. Tickets are $10. Septemberfest. Museum of the Southwest, 1705 West Missouri Avenue, Midland, has scheduled its 52nd annual Septemberfest Art Festival, September 10th through the 11th. The Septemberfest preview party, Under the Desert Sky, will take place from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. September 10th. The daytime festival will continue from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. September 11th. There will be shop artist booths, demonstrations, food and drinks, Austin Bike Zoo, special attractions, live mural painting by Mary Pullman, and more. This year, Kinderfest programs will focus on their mission to immerse young visitors in experiences that inspire curiosity and interaction with art and science, while also providing a fun environment. A portion of Kinderfest activities will be tailored to provide a glimpse of the new Children's Museum, expected to open in the first quarter of 2022. Tables are available for purchase. For preview party tables, general admission seats, or more information, call 432-683-2882 or visit museumsw.org/Septemberfest. Taste of the Permian Basin. The 37th annual Taste of the Permian Basin has been scheduled for October 7th at the Bush Convention Center, 105 North Main Street, Midland. Sponsor preview party will take place from 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. General admission is from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m., $40 in advance or $50 at the door. Featured vendors: Barn Door Steakhouse, 10 Sports Bar and Grill, Coca-Cola, Culligan of West Texas, Ducote Coffee Company, ECISD Culinary Arts, Gerardo's Casita, Johnny's Barbecue Midland, La Margarita, MISD Culinary Arts, Mulberry Cafe, Ranchland Hills, Rockin' Q Smokehouse, Rose's Cafe and Tortilla Factory, Taco Villa, and more to be added. For the comfort and convenience of all attendees, no strollers or carriers will be permitted. Sponsorships are available. For more information, call 432-563-5233. Man re-indicted in connection to death of unborn child. Court records show that a 37-year-old man was re-indicted by an Ector County grand jury for his involvement in a death of an unborn child from 2018. Joel Luna, 37, was re-indicted with capital murder individual under age 10, capital felony. Bond for Luna's capital murder charge totals $1 million, and he was still in custody as of Friday afternoon, jail records show. He was charged with capital felony on June 19, 2018. Luna is also being held for going off bond after he was charged with aggravated assault, family violence, a second-degree felony on May 1, 2018. That bond totals $100,000. Court records show that Luna has a pre-trial scheduled for 10:30 a.m. August 27th in the 70th District Courtroom of Judge Dan Whalen. Luna is also scheduled to have a jury trial in the same courtroom at 9 a.m. August 30th. According to a previous Odessa American article that was posted August 23, 2018, police were first called to Medical Center Hospital on May 1, 2018, in reference to an assault victim. Investigation reportedly showed that Luna had gotten into an argument with his 33-year-old wife before he reportedly began choking her, causing her to lose consciousness. The OPD press release detailed that Luna then kneeled on her abdomen and repeatedly applied force while stating he wanted to kill her baby. Luna's wife reportedly sought medical treatment and was told by medical personnel that she was 5 weeks pregnant and had lost the child she was carrying. Investigation showed she sustained a traumatic miscarriage due to the injuries inflicted by Luna. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Saturday. On August 17th, Juanita Grace Greer got her wings and went to be with the Lord. She was 86 years old. Juanita Grace Greer was born to Earl and Myrtice Roberts in Vernon, Texas. Juanita was survived by her children LaDonna Collette, Ronald and Gail Greer, Randy Greer, Rhonda McLean, and fiancé Donald LaSalle, 9 grandchildren and 16 great-grandchildren, and numerous great-great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her husband Robert William Greer, Jr., and her parents. Visitation was held Sunday, August 22nd at Frank Wilson Funeral Home. Services will be at Frank Wilson Funeral Home with Pastor Glenn Harshman on Monday, August 23rd at 1:00, with graveside services following at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Terry Frame was born on September 12, 1955, to Jacqueline and Hugh Montgomery in Henrietta, Oklahoma. She is survived by her 2 sons, Sean Wheeler and Josh Wheeler, both of Greenwood, Texas, daughter Jessie Sullivan of Greenwood, Texas, and 3 grandsons, 3 sisters, and many loved like family. She is preceded in death by her parents, first husband Alan Wheeler of Greenwood, Texas, second husband Alan Frame of Greenwood, Texas. The family received friends Sunday, August 22nd at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, August 23rd at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Gloria June Crabb, 73, of May, Texas, passed away Wednesday, August 18th. The family will have a private celebration of life ceremony at their residence at a later date. Gloria was born November 5, 1947, in Texarkana, Arkansas, to Neil and Ruby Jean Cranford. Gloria is survived by her daughters Rhonda Broadwell and husband Louis of Ridgeville, South Carolina, Jeannie Arredondo and husband Ricky of Odessa, Julie Wilkinson and partner Daryl Meadows of Duncan, Oklahoma, sons Gary Wilkinson of Texas, and Lance Burleson and partner Angela Alexander of Odessa, sisters Jackie Galneau of Denton, Texas, and Linda Dixon of May, Texas, 13 grandchildren, 19 great-grandchildren, and many nieces, nephews, and friends. Gloria was preceded in death by her husband, Red Crabb, grandson, Brian Holman, great-grandson, Cash Hunter, and a sister, Opal Cranford. Online condolences, tributes, and memorials can be shared with family at www.heartlandfuneralhome.net. Reverend R.C. Hutchison, 93, died Sunday, August 15th, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Tanya Rochelle Newton Griffin, 54, died Monday, August 16th, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Ida Trejo Ramirez, 86, of Odessa, died Wednesday, August 18th, in Odessa. Chapel service will be held at 10 a.m., August 23rd, at Odessa Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home of Odessa. Canyon Lee Laughing Bear Washburn, 19, of Odessa, died Monday, August 16th, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Monday, August 23rd, at Westover Baptist Church. Burial follows at Odessa Garden Section of Ector County Cemetery. Pastor Terry Wright is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Dr. Billy J. Spruill of Odessa, age 54, rode his Giant onto the streets of gold while strumming his Hamer and Epiphone on August 3rd. He is survived by his angel wife, Dr. Michaela Resnick Spruill of Odessa, daughters Abby Spruill of League City and Gabriella Spruill of Houston, mother of daughters Jennifer Esposito, sons James Major Resnick and Drake M. Resnick, both of Odessa, four sisters Linda White, Bonnie Downs, and husband Milton, Betty Summers and April Tyner of Conroe area, many nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his parents, Lois Marie and Joe Bob Spruill of Deer Park. Born in Pasadena, Texas on December 11, 1966, two celebrations of Billy's life have been planned. One was held in Odessa on Saturday, August 14th at Antioch Christian Church, and one to be held in Houston, Deer Park, Texas on Saturday, September 11th, 10 a.m. at Grandview Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family respectfully requests donations be made to hashtag Billy's Helmets by calling Peyton's Bikes at 432-699-1718. Jerry Lee Martinez, 46, of Midland, died Tuesday, August 17th in Midland. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, August 24th at Mid-Cities Church in Midland. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Pastor Daniel Stevens is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Chidi Ikem Madukwe, capital M-A-D-U-E-Q-W-E, 40, of Odessa, died Monday, August 16th. In Odessa, funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Tuesday, August 24th, 2021, Living Vision Ministries. Burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery. Pastor James Porter is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Billy Chandler, 48, died Thursday, August 19th in Midland. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Virtual public meeting focuses on Highways 302 and 285. TxDOT seeks public input on corridor. The Odessa District of Texas Department of Transportation has scheduled a virtual public meeting regarding proposed improvements to Highway 302 in Ector, Winkler, Loving, and Reeves counties. The virtual public meeting is reportedly scheduled to begin at noon, August 31st. Following the virtual public meeting, the presentation will remain available for viewing through September 16th. The proposed project is 59 miles long and would go from U.S. Highway 285 in Reeves County to Farm to Market Road 2019 near No Trees in Ector County. The proposal consists of the following: widen this portion of Highway 302 and make it a four-lane divided highway with two lanes in each direction, as well as both inside and outside shoulders. Include a wide center median and or barrier, and provide median openings as needed based on traffic data. This project is reportedly in the planning stage. No construction funding or construction timeline has been established yet. It has not been determined how much additional right-of-way may be required or whether the project will involve construction in wetlands or floodplains. To log into the virtual public meeting, go to www.txdot.gov and keyword search SH302 Virtual Public Meeting. The online meeting room will open at noon, August 31st, and be available through September 16th. The meeting will consist of a virtual room and will include both audio and visual components. The virtual public meeting webpage will feature maps and exhibits for the public to review and comment on. The public may submit comments using any of the following methods: online comment form found at www.txdot.gov, keyword search SH302, Virtual Public Meeting, email sh302@blantonassociates.com, mail comment form to Blanton and Associates, Attention SH302 from US 285 to Farm to Market 2019, 5 Lakeway Center Court, Suite 200, Austin, Texas 79734. Verbal comments, call and leave voicemail at 432-203-6153. Comments must be received or postmarked by September 16th to be included in the official record of the virtual public meeting. For additional information, please call the project consultant engineer, Todd Thurber, at 432-203-6153 or email sh302@blantonassociates.com to ask questions and access project materials during the project development process. Hello, this is Cindy reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 22nd. Odessa's Miracle Martinez Baby Thriving. OBGYN delivers his own grandchild during emergency, by Federico Martinez. She arrived 4 months early and barely weighed 1 pound at birth. Doctors and nurses at Medical Center Hospital knew the odds of baby Emily Martinez surviving were a long shot at best. 2 years later, the child known as the Miracle Child continues to defy those odds and not only is surviving but thriving. This is the family story and the efforts of MCH healthcare workers to save Emily's life. Early arrival. 2 years ago, Odessa's Rex Martinez woke to the blood-curdling screams of his wife, who was 5 months pregnant. Rex Martinez ran to and opened the door to the bathroom, where he was greeted by a horrific sight. "My wife, Bianca, was drenched in blood," Rex Martinez says, his voice trembling as he recalls the memory from 2 years later. "There was blood everywhere. It looked like something out of a horror movie." Struggling to keep from going into shock, Rex Martinez stumbled back to the bedroom. He grabbed his cell phone and frantically called his father, Dr. Raymond Martinez, a noted obstetrician in Odessa. "Meet me at the hospital immediately," the elder Martinez ordered. 45 minutes later, a weak and dazed Bianca Martinez lay on the operating table at Medical Center Hospital. As her father-in-law prepared to deliver the child, baby Emily would wait no longer and immediately popped out on her own, her parents said. Baby Emily arrived on May 26, 2019, 4 months premature and barely weighing 1 pound. The nurses at MCH immediately wrapped her in plastic so that the shock from the extreme temperature change from the womb into the world didn't kill her, Rex Martinez said. Facing a nightmare. Many of baby Emily's vital internal organs, such as her lungs, had not yet fully developed, so she was rushed to ICU, where a tube was inserted down her throat to keep her breathing. A helpless Rex Martinez could only watch from a distance as his newborn daughter clung to life. "That's when I found out Bianca was dying," said Rex Martinez, his voice choking with emotion as the memories come flooding back. "She wasn't clotting properly. They couldn't stop the bleeding. For the next 24 hours, I was running back and forth, afraid that I was going to lose the two most important people in my life." Because Bianca was losing so much blood and has a rare blood type, MCH had to obtain the blood from Lubbock, which took several hours to arrive. Working around the clock, doctors were finally able to stop the bleeding and save Bianca's life. "Everything was just a miracle," Bianca Martinez says now. "Despite everything being a disaster, everything kept falling into place. God kept me calm the whole time. I just did whatever the doctors and nurses told me to do." For the next 153 days, Rex and Bianca stayed at the hospital's Ronald McDonald Guest House so they could be near Emily as she continued to fight for her life. "The staff at the Ronald McDonald House was so good to us," Rex said. "We are so grateful. We had so much going on, and they would bring us food and help with the little things you don't think about." The Martinez credit MCH's partnership with Children's Miracle Network Hospitals. CMN provides state-of-the-art care, life-saving research and preventive education for children and their families 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. MCH has raised more than $7 million to help children in the pediatric unit as well as newborns in the neonatal intensive care unit. 100% of the local donations stay in the Permian Basin. To learn more about the Children's Miracle Network and how to donate, visit tinyurl.com/PXBHE235. The help and support of MCH doctors and nurses were also vital to helping the Martinez get through the next 5 torturous months. During the day, Rex Martinez commuted to his teaching job at UTPB STEM Academy and then rushed back to the hospital to be with his wife and daughter, who continue to face life-threatening challenges. Baby Emily contracted such a severe case of meningitis while at the hospital. Doctors had to use a ventilator to pump nitric oxide into her lungs so she wouldn't die from respiratory failure. The procedure, which has many dangerous side effects, is considered as a last resort option, Bianca said. The Martinez also had to make the difficult decision of allowing doctors to try experimental medications that the Federal Drug Administration has not yet deemed safe to use. The medications were considered high risk because of the many possible side effects, but to do nothing meant baby Emily would grow up blind. Because Emily had been born so premature, her retinas were not yet developed to where they should have been. The stress on the baby's eyes were threatening to detach her retinas at any moment. The risk was that the drugs could affect her breathing and cause irreparable damage to her veins, effectively making Emily an invalid for life, Bianca said. Baby Emily had to constantly fight various infections during her first year of life because her premature immune system was compromised. Going home. After 5 months, Rex, Bianca, and Emily went home as a family. For the first year, the Martinez had to live in isolation due to Emily's compromised immune system. And then COVID hit, Bianca said. Emily hasn't seen much of the world yet. The Martinez hope the worst is behind them. They moved to San Antonio 1 year ago to take advantage of that area's broader health care services. Emily, who is now 2 years and 3 months old, meets regularly with speech, occupational, and physical therapists who help her continue to physically and mentally mature. She now operates at the level of a normal 23-month-old, Rex said. The biggest challenge the Martinez face is trying to teach Emily how to eat solid food after living with a tube down her throat during the first 5 months of her life. Emily doesn't like anything in her mouth, her mother said. At first, she didn't like to eat solids or take a bottle, Rex said. She doesn't like hard foods like meat. Bianca adds she used to gag at the sight of food. Little victories. Last week, Emily ate her biggest meal yet, some rice and steamed carrots and tomatoes. She briefly licked a piece of meat before pushing it away with her tongue and spitting in disgust. Today was a big victory for us, said a pleased Bianca Martinez, who couldn't suppress a laugh as her daughter made it clear she wasn't ready for meat quite yet. She already has a strong personality, Bianca said. She knows what she wants. Rex and Bianca Martinez just want their daughter to feel safe and healthy. She's doing well, Bianca said. She loves to give hugs and dance and sing. She loves looking at books and is very inquisitive. She's already learned her ABCs. The Martinez said they've wanted to share their story for some time, but were overcome with emotion on previous attempts. This time, Rex and Bianca didn't try to suppress their tears and emotions. If our story can inspire even just one person, then it's worth it, Rex said. Emily is doing fantastic, despite all the problems. She's a miracle story. How to help. Through MCH's partnership with Children's Miracle Network Hospitals, CMN provides state-of-the-art care, life-saving research, and preventive education for children and their families 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. MCH has raised more than $7 million to help children in the pediatric unit, as well as newborns in the neonatal intensive care unit. 100% of local donations stay in the Permian Basin. To learn more about the Children's Miracle Network and how to donate, visit tinyurl.com/S533K7NB. Oilfield Crying for Workers by Bob Campbell. Following peaks in the early summer 2 years ago, oilfield employment is slowly bouncing back from the chaos of the pandemic and the depressed oil and gas prices of last year. Economist Ray Perriman, Permian Basin Petroleum Association Executive Vice President Stephen Robertson, and Permian Basin Workforce Development Board CEO Willie Taylor said the coronavirus variant is creating uncertainty, but the improvement in oil and gas prices from the lows of 2020 is fueling increased activity and higher wages in the region. Employment in the total industry peaked in May 2019 at 57,179, Perriman said. The high point in oil and gas production employment alone came in July 2019 at 12,876, while oilfield services peaked in May at 44,427. There was some excess supply and prices were falling even before the pandemic. The overall decline between February and July 2020 was 32.7%, and the trough came in July 2020 at 33,470. Through June this year, Perriman said, the recovery had brought a total of 38,249 workers, while the mid-July rig count was up to 238 from 122 last August. Weekly wages in exploration and production fell by 48.2% when the pandemic hit, mostly because of fewer hours and less overtime, he said. They have since recovered by 23.3%, but remain well below prior levels. The 7.2% drop in wages for oilfield services has since been restored. Compensation in the region as a whole remains well below prior peaks, but is steadily improving. As an interesting perspective, total employment in the sector was only 13,000 to 15,000 each month prior to fracking. Robertson said well service companies continue to be understaffed, and truck drivers, as always, are in short supply. Growth opportunities are out there, but it's largely a situation that we have seen before when things start to pick back up, he said. There is a gap between the jobs available and people available to fill those jobs. A lot of the well service companies I've spoken to would like to put more crews in the field because the work is there, but they don't have the employees. There is an inventory of wells that have been drilled but are uncompleted. This is not the first time it has happened, but one of the larger areas is truck drivers. Robertson said this recovery is not comparable to previous bounce-back scenarios because the pandemic has skewed everything. We're not ramping up the same way that we have in times past, he said. There are outside forces like politics from Washington. There is definitely optimism, but it's a different time than we have ever seen before. Taylor said service companies like Halliburton and Schlumberger have numerous openings along with manufacturers and other parts of the industry. Depending on experience, he said, roustabouts are making $16 to $22 per hour, pumpers $22 to $25, mechanics $20 to $25, and truck drivers $18 to $25. It's a job seeker market now because companies are having trouble finding skilled workers who want to go back to work, Taylor said. They're offering incentives and bonuses to try to get people. He said 23,000 to 25,000 people are still getting unemployment benefits in the area.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.